Two advisors can work the same 25 years, same kind of clients, same revenue, same service. One of them retires by selling a practice. The other hands back a book that was never actually his and retires on whatever he saved along the way. The gap between those two endings was decided decades earlier, usually without either advisor noticing. Today, I want to show you the one variable that decides it and how to check which ending you're building toward right now. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for any advisor who says, "My book," and has never checked whether the paperwork agrees. We'll cover who actually owns your clients, the equity versus income test, why a recruiting check is not a sale, and whether staying is really safer. One thing we're not doing today is pricing. What a book is worth in dollars is a separate episode. Today is the question that comes first, whether you own anything to sell at all. Start with ownership, because everything else hangs on it. If you're at a wirehouse or most large employee model firms, the answer in most cases is that the firm owns your book. You source the clients and earn the trust. But on paper, the client agreements name the firm. The accounts live on the firm's platform. The data sits in the firm's systems, and your employment agreement almost certainly says so in plain terms. None of that is a trick. The employee model has a logic to it. The firm supplies the brand, the platform, the compliance department, and a steady paycheck. And in exchange, it holds the client relationships as firm assets. Advisors take that trade every day for good reasons. The problem is that most never read the trade closely until they're on the way out. And that is a rough moment to learn what the paperwork said all along. The first step costs nothing. Pull your agreements and find out who, on paper, owns the relationships you built. If the answer is the firm, then the practice you think of as yours is legally a job you happen to be very good at, which is why people say a wirehouse book is worth nothing when the advisor leaves. That line compresses an ownership fact into a provocation, and it deserves a footnote. The book is worth a great deal to the firm. It produces revenue, and when you retire, the firm transitions those relationships on its own terms. What the book lacks is value you can take with you, because there is nothing of yours to transfer. You can't sell an asset you don't own. And retiring employee model advisors aren't always sent off empty-handed. Most big firms run sunset or succession programs that pay a retiring advisor a negotiated amount to hand clients to an internal successor. That's real money. And for some advisors, it's the right ending. But notice whose program it is. The firm's program, at the firm's price, on the firm's schedule. It's a payment for an orderly handoff, not the sale of an asset on an open market. The distinction matters most if you're 10 or 15 years out, because you still have time to change the ending. So run a simple test. Imagine you stopped working next month. Does anything you built keep its value without you in the chair? And can that value be sold or handed to someone you choose? If yes, you're building equity. If everything either stays with your employer or evaporates when you stop producing, you're earning income, possibly excellent income, but only income. The employee model puts you on the income side of that line no matter how well you perform. A bigger book raises your production and your payout, but it raises the value of an asset the firm owns. The independent model puts the same effort on the other side of the line because the enterprise is yours. Same clients, same work, different balance sheet. Ownership comes in more than one shape too. A registered investment advisor, an RIA of your own, a supported independence platform where someone else runs compliance for a share of revenue, a tuck-in where you own your client base without running a whole operation. The economics differ, but each one has the feature the employee model lacks. The relationships you build accrue to you. An income now is worth more than equity, later to plenty of people. The point is narrower. Know which one you're building on purpose, because the default answer is written into your employment agreement. Now, the trap that catches advisors who have half figured this out. They know their book has value. A recruiter calls with a big number tied to that value, and it feels like finally getting paid for what they built. A recruiting package is not a sale. FINRA itself has described recruitment incentives running as much as 2 to 3 times the prior year's commissions and fees, typically structured as forgivable loans. And its own guidance walks through an illustrative 9-year note. That structure is the point. The money arrives as a loan. A slice forgives each year you stay and produce. Leave early, and the unforgiven balance comes due. Each forgiven slice also typically lands as taxable income in the year it forgives, which is a conversation to have with a certified public accountant, a CPA, before you sign anything. So a recruiting check buys your next decade. It ties you to the new firm the way deferred comp tied you to the old one. And at the end of the note, you own exactly what you owned before. Nothing unless the new model itself gives you ownership. Selling a practice you own is a different transaction in kind. The buyer pays for an asset, the entity, the recurring revenue, the client relationships. Once the deal closes, the proceeds are yours, and your obligation is usually a transition period rather than a decade of employment. One is a loan against your future labor. The other is the harvest of something you built. One more question before I wrap up. Isn't staying the safer choice? Safer against some risks. Staying protects you from transition risk. No repapering, no client attrition, no clawback, no learning to run a business. Those risks are real, and the employee model removes them while handing you a brand, an office, and a compliance department. For an advisor who wants no part of running a firm, staying can be the right call, full stop. But safety has a second ledger. An advisor who stays in a model with no equity is trading the most valuable years of a career for income alone. That trade is invisible day to day and enormous at the end. More advisors are examining it instead of accepting it. Fidelity's advisor movement study found that more than half of advisors considered switching firms within a 5-year window, and roughly 1 in 4 actually moved. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. The ownership question is clearly being asked out loud. Yours deserves the same rigor you'd bring to a client's retirement plan, and it deserves a securities attorney who reads employment agreements for a living. Most advisors don't have one on call, and that's exactly why you get one in your corner before you act, because the paperwork is where this whole question gets decided. If you want to know which side of the ownership line you're actually on, we built a short assessment for exactly that. 6 questions, free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. A few minutes and you'll see whether you're building an asset or renting a career. Read what you signed before you count what you built. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.